Welcome back to the Sophos Naked Security Podcast. I'm Anna Brading and I'm here with Sophos experts Paul Ducklin.
Hello, folks.
Peter McKenzie.
Hi, everyone.
And Alice Ducker.
Hi.
Are you excited to have me back, guys?
Very excited.
Oh, I had to miss 2 weeks, so sorry, I have returned. And Alice, thank you for stepping into my shoes last week.
You're very welcome.
Did such a good job. You are back again.
I know, I've been promoted. I now have my own microphone.
Oh, it's very exciting. So as usual, we've picked the top three stories from the week to discuss on the podcast. Coming up on today's show, Alice will be telling us why the Clearview facial recognition debacle's just got a lot worse. Peter's going to be covering another tale from the ransomware swamp. And Duck's going to be talking about eavesdropping smart assistants. But before all that, I thought we'd do a quick roundup of a few other stories from the week. So Google has stopped indexing WhatsApp group chats.
Wait, how
did you not know that they were doing that? Yeah. Well, so it's not the entire chat. I think it's just the, it looks like it's just the sort of name of the chat. So it turns out that if an admin had invited anyone to a group via a link and that link was shared outside of secure messaging, then it could be indexed by search engines such as Google. So if when you're inviting people to a group,
I see.
You can invite them via link and say if you emailed that.
Right,
put
so
it
it's
on
not the actual
forum.
Chat itself.
No,
just
it's
right,
just,
okay. I'm
but with apparently you. There were some interesting group names.
Oh, right.
I've got a few interesting group
names.
Yeah,
go on.
No.
Oh, you mean your own ones?
Yeah.
I thought you meant you had some of the ones that had been leaked.
Oh, no, I mean mine. I don't know if I want to share what those ones are.
I'm interested in those.
Those are bad enough. I suppose that's good on Google, right? Because there's no reason why they shouldn't do that because they are essentially public.
Exactly.
But just like Craig Jones said on when he was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, you know, that Google and indexing things like Trello boards where they're public, where things obviously weren't supposed to be public. Maybe if they didn't index them, although it wouldn't unexpose the data, it would prevent it being misused perhaps as much as it might otherwise be.
Exactly. And I guess it's expected behavior. So if someone sends a link to a group chat, you're not expecting Google to pick that up necessarily.
And also, you wouldn't expect, people don't need to Google. You're not going to be Googling those to find them legitimately. So
no, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, WhatsApp have heard about it. Probably because there was a lot of press around it. And it's now, so it's now put in a no index tag. So Google is no longer indexing it.
That's good.
Next story, guys, you ready? Mm-hmm. Ransomware has led to drug dealers walking free from prosecution. So the city of Stuart in Florida suffered a ransomware attack back in April last year, which took city servers offline. But the data was backed up, luckily. Peter, you all know about this, ransomware attacks. Yeah. And the city refused to pay the ransom. But the problem was, it turns out that not all the data was backed up.
Uh-oh.
So they lost some case records, including that for narcotics cases involving 6 defendants and 28 charges.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. This case.
It's not even the first time this kind of stuff's happened. I remember I think it was the city of Atlanta that was hit by SamSam. They lost police cam footage and stuff like that.
Oh, did they?
Body cam footage. So, yeah, it's quite an issue, really.
Yeah, because you got no case and they walk free.
Yeah.
The only backup you will ever regret is the one you did not make.
So do you think this could have been targeted, where a criminal knows you've got loads of evidence against them and they would actually go in and try and delete the evidence? Would it be unrelated?
I think in this case, it doesn't look like it was because they took the whole city servers offline. But I guess, I mean, it could be.
Right.
And it was only some cases.
It's a good way to cover it up.
Yeah.
They got some back and not the other. It sounds like some people just got lucky.
Right.
I mean, it does happen, right?
It's a typical ransomware attack. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a good reminder of why the devil's in the details.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you guys talked last week about stalkerware on the podcast.
We sure did.
And particularly around putting it on kids' phones as a way of tracking them. So we took to Twitter to see what our listeners thought, or our followers, and asked, would you put a monitoring app on your child's phone? So the results were 40.9% said yes, but tell them, which is interesting. So,
I thought that was interesting,
Do you want to list the other options?
23.5% said no, but they would lock down the phone. 20.9% said no, would keep it as it is. And 14.8% said yes and hide it from their children, that's the worst for me.
I voted for the one that got the most, the 40%. So yeah. Yes, I would.
But you voted more. Well, you can't. It's hard to vote more than once in Twitter, isn't it?
No. But I said yes, I would, but I would tell them. But it was a little bit of a shame there wasn't more options select, because we were talking about the stalker apps, which is recording all their Snapchats and everything they do. Mm. When I was clicking yes to that, I was more thinking just something to get their position.
Yeah, see where they are.
Yeah.
The problem is that most of these monitoring apps, it seems that part of their play, their pitch is, hey, we can record up to and including everything.
Yeah.
And then you can select what you want to look at.
I guess with things like Find My iPhone or something, if you had your child, you could link up your child's, and that would just show the location, I think, or something like that.
I mean, the Sophos mobile technology we have the ability to locate your phone through that. But we purposely chose that it's not constantly tracking. If you want to locate it, it sends a command to it and it reports back its position.
Right.
So it's only like a point in time location rather than constant monitoring. Tracking, yeah.
What was really interesting to me here was that yes, I would want to monitor my kids was the majority by a fair bit. Mm-hmm. And you know, no was about 45% combined, I think. But what was really interesting is that of the people who said yes, they would put a tracker on their kids' phones, 2/3 of them, as you said, but I'd tell them, I would make it clear to them, hey, I'm watching what you do, so there you go, which is quite the opposite of the way these apps seem, or at least the app we talked about last week pitched itself, is that it went out of its way not to be known. Not only did it try and hide itself, it actually misrepresented itself as part of the system. So it seems that that premise, hey, our app's so cool because it can hide itself, is what the smallest number of people actually wanted, which I thought was kind of quite good. Maybe it's not such a bad thing to want to monitor your kids, but say, hey, I'm giving you this phone, I'll pay for it, but the conditions are, I've got this app on here and I can watch what you do. Then that's sort of safe, but not sorry, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't want it to hide. I'd be looking for the app that doesn't hide, because the fact that they're more open about what they do makes me, possibly incorrectly, trust them more as a company rather than the ones that they are going to try and hide everything they do.
That's more upfront.
Yeah. And I think if your kid finds out that there's an app on there that you think is on there that they don't know about, which eventually they'll figure it out, they're just going to go and get a second phone, aren't they?
Or just uninstall it or whatever.
Yeah. And then use that for the things you really want to know about.
And it's not hard to get hold of another iPhone. Like, I never trade in my phone, so I have a drawer of like all my old iPhones. And I imagine that lots of people do, like my mum and stepdad are exactly the same. They've got all of their old iPhones just sitting around. If you were a teenager, you would just adopt someone's old phone and be very good.
And the irony is that old iPhone probably doesn't get security updates anymore, so you're actually more at risk by doing that.
Well, not that old, like an 8.
Yeah.
Well, I can happily say I don't have a drawer of old iPhones. Now, Androids, yes, I've got loads of them.
I always trade mine in, get a bit of money back.
Do you? I always say that I will, and then it's too much hassle to actually do it.
Yeah, I always You're worry so there's rich, something on there.
I'm just so wealthy, I don't need to. I wish.
Yeah, all the podcast money you're getting.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is, all our advertising.
I should put up a donation page on the podcast for me.
just for you.
Yeah.
So Greg Fido from the podcast tweeted the poll, and someone replied saying, I had a keylogger running on my daughter's first laptop and I'm still fighting the PTSD. But like, it's serious, right?
I can imagine that.
Yeah. Like, and you're going to find stuff you don't want to see.
Exactly. You wouldn't actually want to see what your kids are searching, would you?
No.
And it's, I'm sure if you all think
particularly
back,
what they're saying about you.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. If you've had an argument,
it could be a bit hurtful, couldn't it? People do say things privately that they don't mean. And
that's part of being a kid as well. That's part of growing up, that you should separate yourself from your parents.
It's probably similar to a lot of the things you said as a kid.
Exactly.
In fact, in my diaries, I don't know where they are.
Exactly.
Well, and even what a parent would say about their children without their children hearing it, because it would be hurtful. They'd never want them to hear those things, and it works both ways.
Yeah.
Picking which are their favourites and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Have you got a favourite, Peter?
It changes from day. I've got two. I've got two kids, and depending on their mood, that defines which is the favourite. Yeah.
I've definitely got a favourite, but I do only have one. So, so on to this week's stories. Alice, tell us the latest about the Clearview debacle.
Wait, what is the oldest on Clearview debacle? I don't
know. Oh, you've missed
so
it. What's going on?
I'll give you a little timeline. I'll give you an update on everything for those of you who haven't heard the story. So Clearview AI was a little known startup that's been drawn into the public's attention after the New York Times ran a story titled "The Secretive Company That Might End Privacy as We Know It." So the app scraped more than 3 billion images of people from Facebook, YouTube, Venmo, and many other websites, which it converted into mathematical formulas or vectors based on facial geometry, such as how far apart a person's eyes are. This was then put into a searchable database and sold to more than 600 law enforcement agencies. So Silicon Valley giants like Google had the ability to create this technology back in 2011, But the chairman at the time said they held back because this could be used in a very bad way. So, for example, some of the bad ways it could be used if this became publicly available would be if you were on the train, for example, or out in public and somebody liked the look of you, they could easily take a picture of you and upload it into this database and find out where you live, your social media, where you work, etc.
So that would be anyone from law enforcement that could look you up. Is that right?
Currently, but they're saying that the risk is that if this got into the wrong hands, but yeah, you're right. I mean, even people who are police officers or work for law enforcement agencies, there's nothing to say that they wouldn't make some personal searches as well.
If it was public, we know recruiting agencies already check your Facebook and all those kind of things to, you know, look at potential interviewees. This would just be another tool for them.
Yeah, it would be, but because they don't know the person's name, when you're talking about recruitment, they already know your name, so then they can look up your social media profile.
True.
Whereas you're just a face walking down the street, and they're able to match that with all your social media, your employment, your address, all of this kind of information, which you wouldn't have had before. Mm. So scraping social media sites like this is actually against the terms and conditions of the platforms. So I looked at Twitter's terms and conditions, and it explicitly says that off-Twitter matching is not allowed, and they say they want people to feel comfortable to create separate and, if they choose, pseudo identity on Twitter. And a spokesperson for Facebook said the company was reviewing the situation with Clearview and will take appropriate action if they find them to be violating the rules, although one of the board members for Facebook is actually a Clearview investor, which I found quite interesting. So they might have a conflict of interest there.
But Clearview could have been breaking the law. Or at least their terms and conditions is what they're saying. And
then you can see it from Facebook's point of view or Twitter's point of view. They've spent a huge amount of money building their own social network with their own stuff that people are committed to. And along comes somebody else and said, oh, I'll scrape all your data off. And it's already considered unacceptable to do that, for example, to scrape names and addresses and customer details from things that are published publicly that you're meant to be able to see, but you're not allowed to re-commercialize. You can't watch a video that's legally on YouTube and then record it and then represent it as your own. So you can, you know, even from a commercial point of view, you can see where Facebook's coming from. Hey, we did all this work and you're now trying to commercialize it, and then
that's our job.
Well, fair enough.
Well, I think Facebook have had the technology to do it, but they've decided not to.
Exactly,
and that's the thing, because if it gets into the wrong hands, they don't want to be the people who created that technology, basically.
I think it's like the flip side of the, it's sort of the flip side of the whole backdoor cryptographic backdoors argument, isn't it? If you do it for law enforcement, eventually the crooks will find out, and then eventually after the crooks find out, everybody will find out, and then everyone will be able to use the system, which was meant to be a little bit sensitive and a little bit restricted. And as you say, Alice, you know, then anybody can look up anybody anytime using the power of something that's basically leached a whole load of images from a whole load of other companies. It does seem that at the very best it kind of feels a little bit unfair.
Right.
And you said, so Facebook said they didn't want to do it, but now you're saying this is...
Well, I don't know whether Facebook have said that. They've said explicitly that Google had the technology and didn't want to.
Because you're saying one of the Facebook's board of directors...
is an investor of Clearview. Right.
I don't think that, I think you can read too much into that. Remember that public companies are supposed to have non-executive directors that come from other walks of life in order that to keep the company.
But it's interesting that it scraped the data from Facebook. Like, there is a link.
Well, where else? I mean, that's where you would scrape it from.
I think
it's more interesting.
I don't think
that they're an investor in what is probably a small startup. I mean, did they go out of their way to just randomly find that company to invest in? Surely they must have known
what they were doing. Definitely. There was a child abuse case where there was a man seen in a video for a couple of seconds, and they were able to take his face and match it in the database within a number of seconds and solve that case, where in the past they would only be able to put that against mugshots, against people who'd already been...
So there are positive sides to this.
There are positive sides to it,
It's a tool like any of them. It can be used for good or bad.
So the next step in the story is that an intruder has gained unauthorized access to the list of customers, the number of accounts they set up, and the number of searches they've run. So they didn't get access to the actual database or were able to do any searches on there.
But they could have scraped the data illegally for themselves, of course.
But they did have...
They did get the customer list.
They did get the customer list, exactly. So Clearview said that their servers hadn't been breached and there was no compromise of Clearview's system or network. And it
except
said,
for the data.
Because they said they patched a hole.
Yeah, so they
said... So what hole are they patching if no one's got in anywhere?
Maybe there was a database that was copied to somebody's laptop. Yeah, I was going to say, so
there's systems.
Or a USB drive that got left somewhere. Yeah, this is a phone that was lost.
This is a laptop on a train job, isn't it? By the sounds, yeah.
It's very. Or a slide it across the table, a USB stick type thing. It seems very convenient that they would find all of that on a laptop on a train.
I suppose there is some comfort in, you know, our entire network didn't get breached, but the idea that, well, our servers didn't get breached, all our laptops did, is kind of cold comfort, isn't it? It's like saying we had a ransomware attack, our servers didn't get touched, but 17,000 laptops all got wiped
out. Luckily, we were storing all the data on laptops. So
it's saying no compromise of their systems or networks, so presumably it's not mass laptop.
But my worry is that we talk about these ransomware attacks all the time. We talk about people not patching flaws and there being a backdoor to get into systems. If you're going to create something like this that can be used or weaponized on mass scale, even a small breach like this, although it's just showing their customer leak, does also show that there is a risk that it could be put into the public domain, basically.
What data was it that they took?
So the only thing that they had was the list of customers, the number of user accounts they'd set up, and the number of searches they'd run.
Okay. But still, not good.
So the details of all the various law enforcements that are using it, basically. Okay.
Yeah. So a statement from an attorney for Clearview said that security is Clearview's top priority. Unfortunately, data breaches are a part of life in the 21st century. Our service were never accessed. We patch the flaw and continue to work to strengthen security.
It's a bit like, sorry.
Well, it's actually much worse than that. Firstly, obviously, security was not their top priority. Right. It was quite a low priority, and there was some other top priority. But this thing about data breaches are a part of life. When you've had a data breach, like, why would you say something like that? They're not supposed to be part of life. And if you're doing a deal with just 600 law enforcement companies, they're not supposed to be part of life at all. They may be commonplace, they may be regrettable, but the idea that, oh, well, it doesn't matter because, like, it could have happened to anyone.
Yeah, it was inevitable.
Have happened to anyone, but it actually happened to you. So don't, if you have a data breach, don't make excuses. Don't say, oh, well, it happened to everyone else, so it doesn't matter. And don't say it if part of your, if your whole business is focused on supposedly controlling the people who have access to your technology. Now they've just listed who's got it.
Yeah. So following the expose, the New Jersey barred police from using the app, and Canada privacy agencies are also investigating it to determine whether it violates its country's privacy laws.
Now they've been found out. They're like, oh.
I know exactly, because now people know that they are using it. So maybe
the privacy breach may be that they breached the list of customers.
Well, they have, yeah. And so now these customers are like, maybe we should check whether this is legal.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Naughty, naughty. So in terms of advice on this, there's not really a lot that we can say, because basically the risk is that we could move towards a place where when you're walking down the street, your face is your personal identifiable information, and that could link you with anything that you have online.
I think we passed that if you live in the United Kingdom, I think, the idea of being under surveillance wherever you go in public, we crossed that bridge, 15 years ago?
Yes, but that surveillance wasn't able to match you with your address and your social media accounts based on your face.
Unless you already
had a mugshot in the system, which is where they were before Clearview came
along. I think what this proves is whenever you collect data in huge amounts, then something could go wrong. And the irony in this case is the crooks did not get access to 3,000 million images, which were already online, to be fair. They actually got access to the customer list, which was just 600 people. That's all they had to protect, and they didn't manage to do it. So it does raise questions about, if you can't look after your customer list when that's your business, then what else are you doing with the data, and what about your technology and your inferencing engine and all of the conclusions you've read? It's a very poor look for Clearview. And I think this idea that data breaches are a part of life, maybe they are.
It is a crime. It shouldn't be, we've just been hit by another crime today. I mean, no, that's very casual, unsympathetic to the victims.
Definitely.
All right. Thank you, Alice.
No problem.
Peter.
Hello.
You've got yourself out of the swamp. You flicked off all the debris, and you're here to tell us about the latest ransomware tale.
Yeah, ransomware story. So this one, I'm going to do like a walkthrough of the attack and everything the attacker did, or everything we know the attacker did in the attack. And the whole attack, from the attacker's point of view, took 2.5 hours. Okay. Clean up on the victim side quite a bit longer. But this is an attack that we did mention briefly a few episodes ago. It was an attack on an MSP, so a managed service provider. So this company has customers, and they help monitor and manage those customers' networks. They use a bit of software that gives them remote access to those networks, and that they can deploy scripts and execute commands and, you know, gain control of the mouse and, you know, see the screen. I did mention the name of the company the first time around. I'm not going to mention it again because really they're victims as well. Mm. There's plenty of software out there that can do these kind of things. So I'm not going to say the name again. If you really want to find out, go listen to the entire series because I can't remember which episode it was on. but yeah, so the way it worked was they have this remote management system, and it's got a cloud front end, so you can log in online, and then from there you can execute commands and scripts on their different customers. And unfortunately, the MSP had not put two-factor authentication on that login. And at 6:29 in the morning, their time, a attacker from a Russian IP address logged in. And I said, I'm going to do this like the walkthrough of what they did. So 6:29 in the morning is when they logged in. 5 minutes later at 6:34, they executed a command on 83 machines. So the whole customer, they have about, I think it's about a couple of dozen customers with several hundred, I think about 400 or 500 machines in total. So 5 minutes after logging in.
So Peter, just quickly, so these guys, so the crooks have now got into a console.
Yes.
That is a console for even more networks.
Exactly. Uh-oh. Yeah. So, and it's a cloud hosted console by the software. So it's not like they've actually breached the network of the MSP. They haven't, you know, they're not on their machines. They're just in this cloud console.
Right.
And yeah, so it took them 5 minutes to push out a PowerShell, an encoded PowerShell command to these 83 machines. Now, I would say 5 minutes is pretty quick. That I would say implies they've used this system before. You know, they know what they're doing. And they pushed this command out, and they clearly thought job done because they logged out. Unfortunately, they logged back in again about half an hour later at 7:02, probably after realizing it had not worked very well. And
they were trying to ransomware everybody.
Yes, they were trying to. Sorry, yes. Yeah, the PowerShell script, once you decode it, what it does is it connects to Pastebin. And on Pastebin, there was a big bunch of code, a big load of Base64. And basically, it uses a technique called reflective injection, which injects the Base64 into memory after decoding it. And that Base64 is actually the ransomware DLL. So you've got PowerShell, which is obviously legit PowerShell running on your machine, running a command that then injects a DLL from Pastebin into memory on the computer. So no files are actually written to disk. This is what we'd class as a fileless attack.
Right. And the presumably the DLL ends up in some kind of system process that's sort of allowed to do, that's sort of trusted to do things.
Yeah, well, it's running with the permissions of the remote management software. And the remote management software has system access. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, dear. What could possibly go right?
Now, luckily, I mean, the MSP is a Sophos partner, was using Sophos on most of their customers' machines. Hopefully, that is the reason why the attacker got annoyed, because, yes, they can see we stopped the attack. It was Revel ransomware. Or did anyone else pronounce the other name for Revel?
Oh,
Sodonikibi.
Sodonikibi, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, so the PowerShell's reflective injection trying to launch ransomware on these 83 machines didn't really work. Attacker logged back in half an hour ago, and this time around they tried it a different way. So the first time they had just told a command to be executed that was a straight CMD, launching PowerShell, encoded string, going to Pastebin. Second time around, this software has a feature where it can push out scripts. So it's basically, it's a sort of an encoded XML file that gets copied down to the machine, and then the agent for this remote management software on that machine then runs this script. So they would change tactics. The first one hadn't worked, so they tried it doing this method.
So this is a sort of PSExec-like
Kind of thing, yeah. And so other than the method was different and the Pastebin address was different, but it was the same ransomware at the end. They ran that, so they created the script, and they clearly, maybe they hadn't done this before, so they created a script and they called it Tested Plugins. And the interesting thing was they created the, they logged in at 7:02. They created that script at 7:12. And then they updated it a couple of times. It's like they were changing small things. They were trying to work out how this works.
DevOps.
Yeah, exactly. And they never actually pushed that script out. They then, at 7:17, created a second script, which was pretty much a copy of the first one. Again, different pastebin address.
Tested plugins too?
No, this one was called 14.8.8. Now, we're not going to give the full details of what that means, but if you Google that, you will find it is a reference to Nazis. It is the 8.8, 8 being the eighth letter in the alphabet being H, so 8.8, Heil Hitler. The 14, you can Google that if you really want to find out what it means, but it is a reference to Nazis. So kind of puts you in the mindset of this attacker a little bit. So they created that script at 7:17. They updated it multiple times as well. And then they pushed that script out to 25 machines, a different 25 machines to the ones in the original 83. So not only they were trying different script, different technique, they were trying it on different machines, possibly thinking, well, maybe these ones don't have antivirus on or whatever. And they pushed that out at 7:20. It took 2 minutes for it to all go out. Didn't work. Now, at this point, the attacker was clearly getting frustrated because they created a third script. This one...
it's not going to be tested plugins 3,
no,
is it?
No. This one gives us a bit more insight into the attacker. So it was two words, which I put into Google Translate because they turned out to be in Russian. I'm not going to read out the translation, and I'm not going to attempt a Russian accent, so I will spell out the words. So it's P-I-Z-D-A and then B-L-Y-A-T. Now, if you want to go and put those into Google Translate, you will find they are slightly offensive. So whether or not this was the attacker getting frustrated or this is just how they think, I don't know.
Talking to Sophos? Were they talking to the MSP, or were they talking to themselves?
Well, given that they logged in at 6:30 in the morning, at least for the victim's time, they pushed out a command and logged out within about 10 minutes doing that. They're probably, I would imagine, look, this was meant to be a 10-minute job, and now you've got me coming back an hour later and it's still not succeeded. I'd be annoyed.
A bit frustrated.
So I think frustration is probably where it comes from. So on that third script, they pushed that out to another 23 machines at 7:25. It took less than a minute to go out to those machines. Again, pretty much didn't succeed. There was a few machines that were unprotected that got encrypted, but for the vast majority, no damage. And then at 8:07, so we're about an hour and a half in now, they went back to the original method. So they abandoned the script via the encoded XML file. They actually went back to just a command and PowerShell. Again, a different pastebin address. Again, different machines. So they were just hoping to find those machines that weren't protected or didn't stop it, whatever. And then, 8:07, they pushed that script out. This was the one with the swear words. Again, they pushed that out to 108 machines this time. So in total, at this point, they'd done 210 different machines they'd targeted.
Right.
All of which, well, most of which pretty much hadn't got encrypted. And the attackers clearly knew this because they pretty much gave up at that point. But then around 9 o'clock, so as I said, at the 2.5 hour mark, they came back in again. And this time they just launched the 14.8.8 version of the script against two machines belonging to the MSP. So this was just like, I can't do any damage to their customers, it seems. However, I'm going to try and annoy the MSP because I'm already annoyed. And the MSP didn't actually have any AV on those machines. So yes, unfortunately those did. So the most damage was actually to the MSP.
This is like that case you talked about last week where they hit the homeless charity, they didn't pay. So they came back and said, right, we'll get you again.
Exactly. So 212 machines targeted in a 2.5 hour gap. The network itself wasn't, as I said, they didn't RDP into the network. They didn't have an access network. The only damage they were able to cause was via this remote console and able to push these commands and scripts out. But it is unfortunately a trend of attack we are seeing more and more of, especially for the reason that we've covered before, that we've spent the last 5 years, you know, if you're a ransomware victim in the last 5 years and you lose all your data, the normal response is to, you know, curse and swear at the attackers and not pay the ransom. But when it's not your data that's been encrypted, that's not as easy when you've got your customers on the line saying, when are we getting our data back?
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and as a customer of an MSP, like, how are you supposed to...
Well, yeah, I mean, because most of the time people spend it's enough work to just try and secure your own network. Now you're going, well, my network's great, but I am giving access to this third party, and I have no idea how good their security is.
Exactly.
So although it's a bigger hassle, you'd imagine that an MSP they want two-factor authentication to get onto their console in the first place.
Which has now
been
enabled,
some secondary 2FA for each separate customer, that even though that makes it more complicated, it means that a crook who gets into that first console doesn't automatically get into every other customer beyond.
Yeah, and I've spoken to some of the vendors that make these type of software, and many of them do offer those type of things, a role-based administration that, you know, I've got 10 support people that work for these different customers. This one is allowed to access this one, but it can't access all 10 of them. And if they're going to push out a script, maybe they have to have a second layer of, you're about to push a script out to all customers, get your boss to approve it first, kind of thing.
And also make sure you've got AV on every computer.
That would hopefully go without saying, but unfortunately not.
And of course, I think a lot of people may have got into the habit of thinking, oh, well, a lot of these ransomware attacks, generally, they're all about malware attacks. They're all about RDP. And we spoke last week about the case of it was a phishing scam where we went to the phishing link and it was a backdoor that was entirely down to one WordPress PHP plugin that had been illegally uploaded. So the crooks don't necessarily need to get into your network and then log into the console from inside. There might be other routes in, whether it's a content management system, a sort of remote access to remote control system.
Yeah.
Source code control system, anything like that. So it isn't just about RDP.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you, Peter. So, Doug, this morning we sit opposite each other, don't we? And this morning I've had to endure you talking to your phone quite loudly, quite often. Do you want to tell everybody what you've been up to?
Yes. Well, maybe I'll justify it by saying the story is about some research, which we'll come to in a minute, to do with just how easily your smart assistant or your smart speakers, your home assistant, will wake up for the magic phrase, even though you might not have said it. So I wanted to see how I could retrain Siri to be known by a different name.
Like,
so
it's, hey, silly.
I tried Hey Robert and, you know, Hey, some completely different words, and it just went, Siri was unable to understand you. And I had to get fairly close. So,
but it was great because I was definitely not trying to concentrate on writing.
Oh, excellent. I'm glad. But so I did manage to persuade Siri to allow me to call her silly.
Yes.
But it did not stop me also using the word Siri. That still worked as well. So it kind of seems as though by retraining, at least on an Apple, by retraining the word Siri, you can actually make it even more liberal than all the mispronunciations you might imagine for Siri. But you can't change the Siri wake-up call to something that is very, very unlikely.
Right.
Which is, and the reason I was interested in that because of this research into how easily smart assistants might be tricked into waking up. How often do they do it?
And so how often do they do it?
Well, according to the research was done by a combination of people from Imperial College London and Northeastern University, which I believe is in Boston, Massachusetts. And they basically took four different smart assistants belonging to the big four. So there was a Google one, a Microsoft Cortana one, an Apple Siri one, and an Amazon Alexa one. And they subjected these poor things to 125 hours continuous Netflix video.
Sounds like my weekend.
including all the episodes, apparently, of Big Bang Theory and a whole load of other sort of basically a box set binge for 5.2 days worth. And apparently the average number of times based on things that were being talked about in these videos, which could, of course, have included a discussion of smart speakers. So they might have deliberately included the phrases. Apparently they would wake up an average of 19 times a day. Now, that doesn't mean that your Alexa or Google Home or whatever it is that you've got will wake up that many times because you'll probably don't have Netflix on. Well, I don't know.
No, we do. Yeah, that's fairly standard.
Yeah, I suppose you could leave something like the radio playing in the background. But it was they were kind of surprised at just how often words in regular speech were close enough or exactly correct that caused these devices to wake up.
Our Google speakers at home, they occasionally just say, sorry, I couldn't find that, or whatever. I'm like,
oh, really?
I weren't talking to you.
What were you looking for just exactly? And so, of course, there are two sides to this. One is, you know, well, does that mean the phone's eavesdropping on me all the time?
Yes.
And the other is, how safe are they? Well, obviously, if it has to recognize a wake-up phrase, then it must be listening and doing voice processing all the time. And the problem is that these little devices, they're fairly inexpensive. They don't have much CPU power. So to do their job, they basically have to record your voice. And when they think you've asked them to wake up, then they'll take a voice recording and upload it to the cloud. So they are sharing your data, because then some serious computing power can be put at recognizing the general questions you ask. So there's enough power in the device. Just that's why they only allow you to choose, well, three of them. I think Google, Apple, and the Microsoft Cortana. They only let you have the pre-built words. Amazon, presumably because there are people called Alexa, that they allow you to have four choices. You can have Alexa, Amazon, Echo, or computer, which is obviously a word you'd never use at home in real life. So there's a very limited choice. And for them to recognize that with their limited computing power, yes, they are listening all the time. But the good news is that the researchers didn't notice any evidence that they were sharing stuff that they were just listening to for the sake of waking up.
Yeah, so they're listening all the time. And then what are they doing with the data? Just...
Well, it seems that all they're doing is the researchers did conclude that it's reasonable to accept that although they're listening all the time, all they're doing is waiting to wake up. Mm. So they're not secretly recording you and then uploading the recordings while pretending to listen just for the wake-up call. So the conspiracy theorists can stand
although
down a bit.
Although if they're accidentally misfiring.
Yeah, I was going to say, start recording.
Yes. Yeah.
And those are the conversations you weren't intending for the device.
Yes, and that's where it becomes a little trickier, because the way they measured this was obviously it's hard just to measure network traffic because you don't know exactly what it's for, particularly if it's encrypted. But they used, I believe, like a webcam pointing at the device so they could see when it illuminated so that it thought it was, because they're supposed to give you feedback that they are listening in. So assuming that the light is correctly programmed, the wake-up times where they were mistakenly activated, presumably they're then trying to process in the cloud what you say thereafter. And as soon as they realize they're not going to make sense of it, then they give up. The time that was happening apparently ranged from about 43 seconds.
Right.
So there could be, once they wake up, there could be quite a lot of stuff that they're recording and uploading, and you kind of hope they're getting rid of it later.
Because I saw one of the things said that it an Amazon Dot woke up when it heard my pants on. So, I mean...
What?
Yeah, if that's going to...
Wait, what?
Yeah, if someone was saying that...
Just wait until I get my...
All those seconds were uploaded.
Yes, is that because it sounds like Amazon?
Must do you be. Think?
I
there
don't
was
know.
Also the Siri, hey, sorry, I'm sorry, fair enough, and okay, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And seriously, which I have had activate Siri before.
Seriously,
I imagine there's not many people called Alexa that are buying Alexa devices because... of how much would end up getting recorded from them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you're called Alexa and you have a little brother called Echo.
Yeah. no smart devices.
And your dad's called Computer and your mum's called Amazon, then you're in trouble.
It could happen.
So it is interesting that obviously if you go onto the various search engines and look for the questions people are asking, how do I change the wake up word? You can understand this seems to be a very much sought after topic. People, they want the word to be different. And then presumably they imagine, well, I'll pick something that is unusual, so it's unlikely to wake up. Well, for most of them, you can't change it because remember, they're pre-programmed. This is the wake-up word that they're pre-programmed to listen to. So a lot of effort has been gone into making a low-powered device use a simple software to recognize as one word. That's why it's not completely flexible. But the other problem is that whatever word you use, because it's what we call an in-band signal, in other words, it's listening to your regular speech, unless it's a word that you discipline yourself never to use for any other purpose, which is unlikely because that would make it super inconvenient, then you're still going to have this problem even if you change the wake up word to something weird, like weird, then you have to remember never ever say that word. And every guest, you have to brief them when they come in, presumably out in the car, don't say weird. So I know Peter's got one of these. Who else has got one of these devices?
I have got one. Although I did, it was a present and I was resisting it for a long time. But I do make sure it's always switched off. So I don't really use it to its full potential.
No, not
stop
really.
Missing the point. I just turn it on when I want music on. I turn it on and then I ask Alexa to deliver me the music I want. Or my son asks her to fart because she delivers a range
of
farts.
A feature that
it's
they
a
offer.
Feature. You should ask Google, see if it provides the same thing. I bet it does.
I don't have one. I find them a bit creepy and I don't feel
but you do have a phone.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you've all got them.
I've turned it off. I've turned it off on my Mac and I've turned it off on my phones.
Yeah, I've turned mine off on my Mac mainly because the Touch ID is right by the Siri button and it's so irritating.
It constantly came up. Yeah.
Yeah, so Anna, I think, and you've given this advice on an earlier podcast, the idea that if you have, say, an Alexa or whatever in your life, if you have it sitting there all the time, it's kind of part of your family and it is listening and it's supposed to be listening for you to say a word that one of four different words you can choose from. So yeah, why not do what you've done, that if you want to play with the thing, if you want to let your kids have a crack at it, plug it in, everyone knows it's on. You can have some fun talking to it. And when you've finished, if you unplug it, then you can be sure it's not listening. And then this all becomes
I guess
moot.
The only thing is that, so I know some people use it for alarms. They use it for like timers and stuff. I mean, I am not using it to its full potential because it freaks me out a bit.
It's probably going to become like the iPhone. Like initially there was only a few uses for it. Whereas now you use it for so many things that you carry it around with you 100% of the time. And I imagine it will be same for these devices.
But who wants an alarm clock that's easy to turn off? That's crazy. You want an alarm clock where you have to stumble out of bed across the room and find it.
Otherwise, you don't know because your iPhone is next to you anyway.
I don't have Listen for Siri turned on my phone for that reason. I don't want it lying around at work and accidentally.
No, but I mean, my iPhone is my alarm and it's like 2 centimeters from my hand.
Yeah.
Well, there is your problem.
We already use it. Yeah. So we don't, I mean, the primary reason we bought them was so we could have them in multiple rooms and play music in multiple rooms all at the same time, all sync together. And that works really well. But
do you say sync or sing?
Sync.
Oh, it's such a lovely family thing to do, Peter.
I imagined you
were
singing.
No,
that would be really cute.
The singers are alive, the sound of music.
No, for the kids, it would just be Baby Shark and stuff like that. But anyway, now we're asking it to, you know, set calendar reminders. Mm. And we've got a couple of smart plugs, so we use it to, you know, turn lights on and off. And it's really handy. There we go. That's my advert. Mm.
But to do that, it does have to be on all the time.
And I acknowledge that.
Yeah, okay. So as long as you don't expect that it won't wake up, because it's designed to wake up whenever anyone says one of those words. Mm-hmm. And now I know with I think the Google devices and the Apple ones, you can train it to recognize your voice above other people. So it'll personalize the results.
With Google as well, you can actually, in your Google account, you can log in. I forget how to get to it, Google it. But there's you can go in and you can actually listen back to all the recordings it's made for years.
I didn't know I wanna
do that. You can go listen to them. And it's normally you're just talking in a sort of robotic voice saying, what is the weather like or whatever it is? But yeah, they're all there. You can delete them. Whether or not that deletes them from everywhere, I don't know. But they're all there if you want to listen to them.
Okay, thanks, Duck. And thanks, everyone. Alice, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me as Ali Rouge on Twitter.
Paul Ducklin.
At DuckBlog on Twitter and at PDucklin on Instagram.
Peter McKenzie.
At AltShiftPrintScreen on Twitter and nowhere else.
And I'm at Anna Brady on Twitter, and we are, of course, at Naked Security. Don't forget to subscribe, rate and review our podcast. It's great for us to show our bosses so we can keep making the show. Go find us on YouTube, Facebook and Instagram. And until next time,
stay secure.